Hi, and welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Gareth Ainsworth, who's best known for his incredible football career and currently being the manager of QPR. However, Gareth also has a deep passion for music. And in July, he will be releasing an album by his band, The Cold-Blooded Hearts, which is called The Cold Light of Day. So welcome, Gareth. And I can see you're enjoying the sunshine in your garden by the look of it.
For once, yeah. It's lovely around here. And thank you very much for that. And as you say, you know, known for football, but hopefully people do recognise that a big music fan and music's played a huge part in my life, as everyone's life. But to actually try and, you know, run the two parallel in my life has been quite testing at times, but managed to...
I imagine it has. In fact, the whole thing runs like an episode of Ted Lasso. In fact, this would have fitted in as one of the in the recent series really well. Manager also plays in Rock Band. It just fits in absolutely brilliantly. Where did your love of music, did it come from your mom? I know, because she was quite a singer as well, wasn't she, in her own time?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, mum was the wild one, you know. So back in the day, mum growing up in Lancashire, you know, they didn't have a lot at all. And I think she left school at 14, 15 back in the day, where you could do that, to go and work in mills and factories and things like that. But she had an incredible voice. And she actually got picked up by a couple of agents to sing on the big bands, you know. So Yeah, so obviously you'll know, Phil, but for some of your younger listeners or viewers, the big bands were these massive orchestras that would play, and the whole stage was filled by musicians with this one person at the front with a microphone, and that was it. And they would be the focal point. And mum sang in all the Mecca bingo halls and the Cavern. You're lucky enough to sing it there with the Beatles place, and same venues as Dusty Springfield and people like that. Brenda Lee, big band singers, and so, you know, music had always been in the family, and mum would be forever singing around the house and forever going to gigs. It was drying up by the time me and my brother were born, so that the actual music was from mum. You know, she wanted to, she had the rock and roll lifestyle. She wanted to teach me to sing and teach my brother to sing. My brother sort of was very resistant, but I'm glad to say that I know when you say teach to sing, I think you're naturally born with some sort of tone or some sort of depth in your voice. But then there is a technique to it, you know, as people well know, and you know, there's a breathing technique, there's a way to hit high notes, low notes, everything. And mum taught me that from an early age, and I think she was really wanting to go in the footsteps, and that was the aim. That was the aim early on, you know, going into the footsteps. But I had a big rock and roll father as well, who watched Hendrix at Blackpool, and big Kinks fan, and the Who, big Who fan, but also a big football fan as well. So there was both, you know, modems growing up, music coming at me from one stage, and then sport and football, which came down the other side. But no, the love of music definitely from mum, and the way she was.
So one of your early bands, Dog Chewed the Handle, this is where you actually, if I've got this right, you actually hid the fact that you were pushing for a football career at the same time. And it wasn't until you were offered a tour supporting Bad Manners, was it? You actually said, oh, guys, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah, it's been crazy, honestly. So really early on, it was singing in bands and pubs and clubs that no name bands, really. We were just covering and things. I had this dream of being this rock star, but the football kept getting in the way. But I answered an advert in Loop magazine, can you believe, in the early
I remember that.
I mean, Loop magazine would then, you know, advertise for singers, and I turned up at this place, this house with a garage converted into a studio, and sang a few songs, didn't let on who I was. Not that I'm anyone special, but I was playing for Premier League and Championship clubs by then, and but I kept that quiet because I wanted it to be on the musical talent. I always had this thing that I want people to like me for what I can do in music rather than who I am, and maybe it'll help the music. So I kept it quiet, and we played quite a few gigs around West London, and And yeah, Buster Blood Vessel came to one. I can't remember where it was now. It was off some sort of canal somewhere. I think he was living on a barge, which was pretty close to the canal. And he came to the club one night. And my guitarist is a big Clash fan, Lee Sargent. He's written all the songs on the album, actually. And he's the genius, the musical genius. We've written a few together, but he's absolutely the driving force of the music. He's a big Clash fan. And I think, you know, ska music and that sort of era, the early 80s, was big around then. And Buster Blood Vessel said to us, do you want to come and support Bad Manners? And I thought, this ain't going to work. You know, I've got a football game on Saturday. We're not going to be able to go around the country with Bad Manners and support, which was a great offer and a wonderful, you know, a bit of kudos for me. But unfortunately, we never took off with that, and I had to stay... I played just pubs and clubs, and we had always the ambition of getting something out.
Yeah, because you formed the Cold Blooded Hearts in 2015, and Lee and Gareth have been with you since that first band, haven't they? You've been with them for over two decades now.
Yeah, so 20 years now together, me and Lee. And I'll have to say that Lee would fit in well as a football manager. He knows what he wants. That guy, bloody hell, he's a real hard taskmaster. And in rehearsals, people getting things wrong or people not remembering their parts, however simple, or even me getting a lyric wrong, you know, he'd be on you. And I think that was great. I think that was really good, you know, because people talk about discipline in music, and that he takes it super seriously. He's a you know, professional musician, if we can say that. Gets little bits here and there for his music, but he was the real driving force behind it all.
He's a great player. Watch some videos on YouTube where you're rehearsing. They're filmed in black and white, and you can tell that he's got a real command of the instrument, and it's a really great sound that he has as well.
Yeah, I mean, his influences over the years are fantastic guitar players, and you know, it's difficult because he's a real sort of folky guy as well, where, you know, John Mellencamp, Bob Dylan sort of stuff, and he's a genius, honestly, on some of the you know, the parts we've put together, keyboards, don't even play the bass on a lot of stuff, and drum beats, you know, just the whole shebang. Lee, lucky to have him, and like I say, he had to come over to the sort of Hair Bear, rock and roll, sort of Poison, Def Leppard, Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue years that I had. And sort of, I think he always thinks that that's a strain for him to get there, you know, because he was a real sort of David Bowie, flashy sort of, you know, he wasn't the hair stuff. And I think we combined quite well together.
I think you pulled him over quite well, actually. Listen to the new album. I mean, who were your early musical influences for yourself as a vocalist?
So I'll have to say that the tone that I sing in, it's a real Jim Morrison sort of tone, you know.
Oh, the Doors,
yeah, that was huge for me. The Doors, I got into the Doors through Dad. Big influence, and compilation CDs of rock and roll back in the day were few and far between, but rock radio and things like that, the Doors kept popping up, and I love the tones of Jim Morrison. I just love the music, the hypnotic sort of rock. When I, you know, people say, you know, the kind of rock that I'm into, and I'll mention Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses, and they go, oh, you're really heavy. And I'm like, no, these aren't heavy bands. And then The Doors is my favorite, which is a real non-heavy sort of blues rock band, you know. And so Morrison's tones, Morrison's manners, Morrison's look, you know, who couldn't be attracted to that, you know, male or female. So I was like, this guy is you know... The epitome of cool, and I sort of modeled myself on that. I wanted to be his tone, be his screams, be his sort of dynamics on stage, and that was really why I got into Morrison in a big way, you know. And then, like I say, all through the 80s was probably that, the 90s, that, you know, the Oliver Stone film came out, just reaffirming things for me, how cool he's been. But then Guns N' Roses hit me hard, and the LA scene. I think I got into the LA scene because the Doors were LA band, you know, Venice Beach and all the stories, and going over to LA and experiencing whiskey, the Rainbow Rooms, and then finding out about the Motley Crues, the Guns N' Roses of the world. And then I'd say that, you know, the rock of the 80s really hit me hard. And then that opens you up to sort of the Black Crowes and the Ramones and Lou Reed and stuff like that. And so I was hypnotized by the American stuff, I'll have to say, and that really grabbed me. So there's a couple of tracks on the album that were very you know, Black Rosie sort of sound in Southern rock, you know, if we could say.
And so that
was really my influences. But Morrison probably started it all off, and Morrison was the one where I wanted to be the singer. I wanted to be that lead man. And we'll have to say that the Lizard King kicked it all off for me.
Fantastic. Do you find that the similarity between the adrenaline and emotions you get from playing in a rock band like you do, does that compare with how you are when you're on the pitch, whether you're playing in the team or actually as a manager? Is there?
Yeah, you know what? I think there's massive similarities. You know, you're in front of a crowd, and the moment that ball comes to you, you know that all the eyes are on you because everyone's following the ball. That's it. You're on the ball. Everyone's following you. And maybe it's the extrovertism in me, but that's when you want to perform. That's when you want to be at your best, you know. So when I used to, well, when I still do, and you get on stage and you're singing in front of people, no matter how many people it is, their eyes are on you. And, you know, I think, again, back to mum, I think the performer in me, and my daughter seems to have it. My daughter seems to want to perform in front of anyone, you know, playing piano or singing or whatever. And I think it's in there because some people just hate that. Some people can't stand up in front of people. And I'm the absolute opposite, you know, and to the extent of, you know, I'm willing to do it in front of anyone. And I think that was always been in me from mum again.
So you're influenced by the Doors, and obviously your musical tastes have evolved as you've got older and you've gone through this. And plus you're in a band full of lots of different musicians, and it sounds like you've had a really good crossover in how, you know, you've got the Clash and you brought, guitarist over to more of a rock centric thing. But has the way that you evolved musically, did that also change your approach to football as well? Both careers have kind of fed off each other.
Yeah, I've used it, you know, Phil. I have to say I've used it. You know, anyone who says that they can't get motivated by music, they can't go to a different place with music. So I'm not too proud to admit that, you know, when people say what motivates you, I can say music sometimes, you know, listening to people, listening to the genius. Or, you know, people will sometimes just listen to a song and just hear a song, where some people listen to a song and hear every single part and the way it's constructed, the lyrics and what they mean. And I think that, music has played a huge part in my life when I've gone through the hard times. You know, the good times are great. The good times are always brilliant, but the hard times as well, it's a crazy thing to say, but music's got me through some pretty tough moments and some pretty tough times. I don't know if people will know what I'm talking about when I say that, but it certainly has, you know, and I think that when you hear lyrics, you look into them, you look into songs, you know that other people have had tough times, other people have had tough lives, and they've come through it, or they've got out of it, or they've been through this, and that's in music and in lyrics and in everything.
I totally understand that. One of the taglines for my YouTube channel is that music is the healer and the doctor. And I do like a music for mental health series because I do think that it really does help people. My next question was going to be that, have you ever used music to motivate or connect with your players at all in the football world?
Yeah, 100%. You know, we have the customary sort of musical jukebox in the dressing room before the games, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, now I'll have to say that back in the day as a player, I managed to rise to captain of some teams, and you could hear the dulcet tones of AC/DC and I mean, all that you could think of your rock songs that would get you motivated, that sort of music was on in the dressing room. Over the years, I've been overpowered, I have to say, you know, the different genres coming out, the weaker I got in the position in the team, and especially when I had to retire. There's some stuff out nowadays. I couldn't even tell you what it is. You know, it sounds like one song for about an hour and I'm not even sure. So, but I always have the final song. So then I remember at QPR when I played and we played our promotion season, we had AC/DC, You Shook Me All Night Long, you know? We ran out to that song every single game that season. And it wasn't just the song, but it was when you heard that song come on, you knew you were in the zone to go and play a game. And everybody, no matter, you know, creed, race, color, religion, whatever it was, when that AC/DC song came on, you knew who you were at that moment and what you were buying into. And every single player bought into that song. And we went out and we got promoted at Hillsborough, at Sheffield Wednesday. And even to this day, I always remember going out for that song that last time and saying to the boys, this is it, boys. This is the one last time. Here we go. You know, and it brought us together so well. And I've always used that final song, all my success at Wickham as a manager, the boys will verify this. And I can thank Jack White for Seven Nation Army, because that comes on. So when you hear that bass beat,
yeah,
you're in work mode. You're in that mode that you're going out into that. And I've taken it to QPR as managers as well. So the song they went out to is Seven Nation Army as well. And that's that kept us survive this season as well. So yeah, these moments that you hear. You know, people wake up from comas after like a year when they're hearing their favorite song. You know, this is powerful stuff. And if anyone wants to dismiss it, then more fool them. I'll stay.
No, I'm 100% behind you on that completely. Yeah. Has your involvement in music created like any unexpected opportunities within the world of football, or vice versa? Do you feel it's
my career in football has definitely opened up some amazing opportunities in music. So, Being a friend of Joe Elliott is one of them, you know. So the Def Leppard lead singer who got me through my teenage years with Hysteria and Mania, you know, those albums fantastic, you know, iconic moments in music. And then I end up exchanging emails with Joe Elliott, and he's getting me tickets to gigs. And
oh, wow.
I mean, just phenomenal. I'm really lucky that one of the labels that's releasing is Cherry Red Records. Yeah. I mean, great label, to get to know those guys really well. And again, opening up doors for me to go to gigs, to meet people. And then, I mean, one of the ultimates is obviously Jeff Downs, the Yes keyboarder.
Yeah. He produced your album, yeah.
Produced it, and not only produced it, he's playing on about seven songs, which is absolutely incredible. And when you think of who that guy is, what he's achieved, and for our debut album to be involved in Jeff Downs, and to watch him actually play, Phil, to go over to his studio in Cardiff, and that was, you know, half the recordings were over there, half were done in West London, but to see him play. And to hear him play on the album, and he's asking us, is that okay? And I'm thinking, oh my God, Jeff, you're Jeff Downs. You just put whatever you want down and we'll be happy with it. But it just an amazing experience to see one of the greatest in full flow. It was brilliant to see. So again, when you talk about opportunities, that's I'm on the same record as a legend, you know, and that's
well, it's a fantastic record as well. It's 10 tracks plus the bonus track, Conspiracy of Silence, and it comes out next month, doesn't it?
21st, yeah.
Because I was looking at the Cherry Red kind of press release saying it's a classic rock band, which is interesting. It's called that because obviously the background is kind of new wavy punk, which is where you came from. But it is very much a modern rock album. And there's some great tracks on it. I think my favourite one at the moment, because I was playing it again this morning, is Broken Sky.
That
is such a hypnotic song. And you've got those female vocals at the end. And it just goes around in a circular way. But it's a very uplifting and positive song. But the main chorus is, heaven doesn't have, was it a place for me? The devil's
will decide a place for me. Heaven doesn't want me.
What's the story behind that, the song?
So, Lee always wants people to try and work out the story, but in a nutshell, you know, the lyrics aren't hiding anything. It's almost a take on, it's a relationship. It's a relationship issue where the guys, obviously, it could be the girl. But is obviously an abusive relationship, and in the end it just becomes too much, and then people thinking that it's all their fault and heaven doesn't want me and the devil's put aside a place for me. But really, when you look deeper into it, it's obviously the other way around. It's not your fault at all. It's somebody else's fault. But the hypnotic track of that, we thought
he's very doorsy, you know, very sort of long, and the repeat lines. We can see it maybe featuring in a movie or something.
Oh, yeah, like that. Yeah, definitely.
No, without a shadow of a doubt. But again, it definitely passes the whistle test, doesn't it? Because it stays in your head and you just keep repeating it and you keep singing along to it. So I've had a few people actually say, all that's in my head is that going round and round and round. And that was what we wanted to try and get. So no, I'm pleased it's got in your head as well, Phil.
Yeah, and the other one worth waiting, that I could pick up a bit of Jim Morrison in that one. It's kind of Nick Cavey as well in places. Great, it's a great song. What are the songs that you really liked recording? I mean, because I like them all, but Tell Me, which is quite punky in its approach for the guitaring. But which songs are? I mean, are you thinking of going out live and playing any of these?
Yeah, I mean, Tell Me was the first song we ever wrote together. So it's a 15-year-old song, Tell Me, you know, and it's a real raw, and we could have added to it. And I still listen to it sometimes thinking, could we have added some, a riff here and there and just fill the song out a bit? But I think part of the reason was we wanted to keep it as we first heard it and as we first wrote it. And we hope that people go on the journey with us and think, okay, that was their first song, and they've evolved to songs like, Broken Sky. And I love... Eastern Sunrise. I think Eastern Sunrise was a lot of fun to record, you know, because we kept adding little riffs and little licks. And there's an introduction cymbal thing in there all the time. I couldn't pick one out. Worth Waiting is, as you say, it's my high energy song. It's the one that I'd probably enjoy singing the most, because I'll get to jump around a little bit more than the others. And that's, that's part of the show for me, Phil.
I like that. I also like Hollow, which starts as like a ballad, but it's got some really powerful chords in it as well. It's really very heartfelt.
Jeff's, to hear that as well. And Jeff Downs plays the intro and plays the keyboards all the way through that. And the piano for me at the start, it gives you a feeling. It's not just the piano, you know. I'm a big fan of November Rain, the Guns N' Roses track, you know. And when you hear that piano, you get a feeling. So it's not, you can't just listen to the piano and go, oh, it's a great piano. He sets the mood, and that's incredible what Jeff does. And that's the kind of guy he is. He sets the mood for the song, which, you know, again, is about, you know, a serious illness. And dementia and things like that. We've written a song about there. So it's a real powerful sort of thing. And Lee wanted to those chords to really come across and go, listen, this is not a joking matter. This is a powerful song. And so I was really, really pleased.
I also think, because I didn't realize that was exactly what the subject matter was about, but I think that's a really powerful subject, and it's really good that it's covered.
Yeah, we wanted to, and as I say, you know, we do want people to listen and have their own take on things, because music can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But I know when Lee wrote that, I remember to this day, he came to rehearsal with it and he said, what do you think this song's about? And he played it me and sang it to me. And I said, you know what, I don't know. It sounds a sad song. And he went, it's a powerful song. He said, what's really, really prominent today and what's getting, you know, a lot of press and all, he said, is you know, the people losing people, and they're still here, but you've lost them because they don't remember you. They don't know who you are. And so, you know, it's, the chorus is quite, you know, I am blind to the darkness that you see, you know, we can't feel what the person's feeling, you know, and bring you back home. You know, we're trying to bring these people back home. So real hair standing on your arms moments, but hopefully people appreciate what the song's about.
I think they will. And I actually think that the song will bring people a lot of comfort. And as we said earlier, how powerful music is in helping to heal or to come to terms with things. I think, you know, a lot of those songs, and Broken Sky, I did think it was about that. It's got kind of a Steve Earle kind of a theme as well. But that really works. I also like Grey, which is the track before that. That's a great song.
I mean, again, you know, topical, very topical at the moment, you know, with the teenagers of today and the things they go through. And I think that, you know, it was about when we were younger, and we probably didn't have the support and the press all about it, and you know, people are now a lot more aware of of issues, mental health issues, things like that. And I think we've got to try and just bring, you know, we are a rock and roll band, but you've got to write your songs about something. And we want to try and get messages out there that are important to people as well as the good music.
Because I suppose this puts you in a very good position, because you're an inspiration for people from what you do in your football career. You know, from how people see you and you perceive through the media, etc., but also through music, it shows a different, because through music you can express yourself in a different way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I can say things in music and sing things or you know that I can't do in football. I think that's really important. That I think the most important thing was that as a band, we never wanted the football to drive the music. We always wanted to be recognized musically, you know, that's a big thing, especially for Lee, who's worked all his life on stuff like this. And so, you know, I'm hoping that people will go, oh, yeah, this is a great song. It's that you know, we do know that a guy plays football, but this is musically, we like this as well. You know, it's not just because I'm associated with something else, but if I can be an inspiration to anyone with any of our songs, with any of our messages, or like I said earlier in the interview, you know, music can change moods, it can change lives, it can change anything. And if we can change anything with our music, maybe it's just making people feel good, then it's all been worthwhile.
Well, the album's full of hope. I mean, the opening track, High, that's very uplifting and feels like it's a song about life lessons and, you know, and some great guitar playing as well as vocals in that.
Yeah, I mean, Lee, like you say, on the solos, he's definitely got a unique sound, you know. He definitely goes off on his solos on his own. I'd love people to listen to these solos and you know, certain guitarists have their own sound when they solo. They really do. You know who's, you know when Slash is solo and that is, you know. And I'm hoping that Lee, you know, it'll take some time, but get recognized and go, you know what? Yeah, he plays very similar solos all the time because it's signature, it's his way. But you know, to be in the presence of like him and Jeff, and when they're writing these solos together, and when Lee comes up with one and says, "What do you think of this?" I'm just blown away sometimes. So I hope he really gets the recognition he deserves because he works so hard.
Well, and also I think say I'll mention Lee again here at this point. I think that his solo served the song. It's
yes,
everything fits in like a team.
Yeah,
and everyone's going off on their own thing, saying, "Oh, this is my moment."
Yeah, and I think that's important. You see that in all bands, all successful bands, you know, work as a team, no matter what they are, and the team can sometimes get fractured down the line. We've heard plenty of stories of that, but right at this moment, we're working together really well, and as you say, the solos really do serve the song. Lee knows how to write a song. He knows what to do. He's been doing it for years, and it's a pleasure to work with him on this.
So, obviously, with your very busy life that you have, are there any plans to play any gigs to promote this album or video broadcast or anything?
Oh yeah, we've got one or two appearances at places. I think we're at Rough Trade on the night of the opening, the night of the release. We're at Rough Trade in East London. So again, even if it's an acoustic set of these or some feel about the songs, we can do that. You know, again, my football career does really scupper this band's chances of going on a world tour if we ever got that big. But believe me, I'd love the decision to make. We'll try and get a few gigs locally around West London if possible, just to promote the album. But you know, we're hoping, as we say, that the promotions that people are giving us will just whet the appetite a little bit. And if people can get used to listening to these songs, get them on the radio, we'll be more than happy.
And how do you see your involvement with music, how you've got to this point? This is the first album that's coming out through Cherry Red Records. How do you kind of see evolving alongside your football career? Do you see that is this exactly what you would have liked to have seen, the way it's gone?
Yeah, I think so. I think the ambition, Phil, was always to go into music and become a full-time musician after football. That got sidetracked when I became a football manager and I started extending this crazy life in this crazy game. And I love it. And football obviously is a big love of mine. I've been lucky enough to manage over 600 games now and played nearly 700, you know. So there's big affiliation to the sport that's probably enabled me to do a lot of what I've done. But I've always answered the question, whether it's, you know, David Beckham or Mick Jagger's life, there's only one winner there for me. And I'd still be on tour with the Rolling Stones right now.
Brilliant answer. And the album, it comes out, it's available on vinyl, CD, download and to stream, isn't it?
The full whack, yeah. We wanted to make sure that that was important because, you know, vinyl was so important to us growing up. And listen,
yeah,
it's a band of guys of, I think there's one of us under 40 and the rest of us are over 40. So vinyl played a huge part in our lives and there's no way we're going to shy away from that.
Well, brilliant. Well, thanks very much. It's a fantastic album, everybody. And it's called, it's by the Cold Blooded Hearts and it's called The Cold Light of Day. And it's absolutely wonderful album, very uplifting. And as I say, covering lots of issues that all of us live through at various times in our life, both good and bad. So thanks very much, Gareth. That's been really, really great talking to you.
It's been great to meet you, Phil. And thank you so much. As I say, you know, it's awesome. Awesome. Hopefully the album can do well, but if not, at least I've still got an album out there. I'm really pleased.
And it's available from Cherry Red and all major online outlets. Cherry Red
and all the downloads, all the normal sort of avenues of download, but Cherry Red, they've backed us. So go to Cherry Red and get it off them. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. And thanks very much. And good luck with it. And hopefully I'll talk to you again in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Phil. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks very much. So thank you for tuning in. And a big thank you to my special guest, Gareth Ainsworth. And remember to check out his album on Cherry Red Records by the Cold Blooded Hearts, A Cold Light of Day. It's absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure you'll all love it. Remember to check out the website, Now Spinning Magazine, at nowspinning.co.uk. Check us out on YouTube and social media, on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And subscribe to the podcast as well. And join us on Patreon if you'd like to support us further. Take care. Remember, music is the healer and the doctor. And I shall see you very, very soon.